listening to Republic Broadcasting Network at republicbroadcasting.org. It's not Richard King. Narrative on RBN, and as you can tell, I'm not Richard Carey, and Richard's fine. Just he's taking care of, I think I got dropped. It dropped the call. Am I back? I see that. It says, okay, so Casey was just saying how much he hates Skype, and I see, yeah, it just went kabow, it left. But thanks. I'm sorry about that, RBN. I'm back, and I am Stephen Whitener, as I've said. I'm the host of Thought Crime Live that will come on tomorrow morning from 8 to 10 Central on Saturday. Just Thought Crime Live, and this is Beyond the Official Narrative Friday evening. And as I just let the cat out of the bag, I'm joined by a frequent guest on RBN who's been on Thought Crime Live a few times. I don't know if you've been on this time slot or not with Richard before, but Casey Whalen's familiar to RBN. Thanks for joining me, Casey. I hope we didn't lose you too. We've been having a connection problem, it seems like.
Yeah.
Oh, Casey there, Casey?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, it's kind of dropping in and out a little bit, so we'll see how it goes. I think it'll be okay, maybe. But thanks for having me on. Good. I really appreciate it.
I hear you will hear that little. Sometimes it almost sounds like a sonar in the background of Skype sometimes when it's trying to get all of its gears linking together. And some people will go, "Blah, oh, we're being messed with." But no, probably it's just, you know,
Microsoft.
You know, live radio. Yeah, it's live radio, and I'm using my phone and my headphones. And okay, now you have been a frequent guest, as I said. You were at an event recently. Oh, okay. Oh, terrific. All right. I'm joined by your friend, Doug. I don't want to mispronounce his name, Casey. Let me let you introduce him. I was just reading Trouble. His book. Trouble. Yes. Okay. And thanks for joining us, Doug. You hear us okay?
Not very well, because my volume's pretty low. I have mine all the way up, but you're kind of low.
Okay. I hope I'm coming through clearly. I just was introduced to Casey, and then I was trying to tell folks that I have you as well. I just had been looking at your book. Let me Casey, you go over a little bit about that and introduce Doug, and we'll go get to the specifics after that, if you like. I would like to ask you a few questions about what I read. It was very interesting, and let me turn it over to you, Casey.
Yeah, so I met Mr. Trouble at the recent Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association event held in Las Vegas, Nevada on April 17th. And it was an event to, of course, educate the public. It was to bring in sheriffs, and Doug can talk more about that, maybe some of the people that were there, and just to promote the idea of the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. And Doug was there to give the invocation and did a great job. And if you want to see any of the videos that I put out from that event, you can go to my Twitter, which is Casey_Whalen. That's WHALEN. And you can see some of the videos. Doug even did an interview with Bob Songer, Sheriff Bob Songer of Clickitat County. And he discussed his how he runs posses in his community. And so the CSPOA has received a large amount of pushback from some of these Marxist groups and organizations that have been targeting other patriotic organizations. So we can talk more about that, but I'll pass it off to Doug, and he can introduce himself and talk about what he's doing. He's running for sheriff in Ada County, and hopefully we have some listeners in Ada County that will support Doug here. Go ahead, Mr. Trouble.
Oh, thank you, Casey. I appreciate it. Yes, this is Doug Trouble. I am running for sheriff of Ada County, Idaho. Ada County is the capital county where the city of Boise is located. I'm running as a third-party candidate, as a Constitution Party candidate. Normally that's a non-starter, but given my history of running previously, it's not a non-starter for me. I'm pretty well known and have a lot of support within the Republican Party. It was a chess move to run as a third-party candidate so that I can guarantee a path to the general election and the people will still have a choice come November if, let's say, things go south in this country between May and then. This strategy makes me a viable alternative in November. If I would run as a Republican and got bumped out in May, well, then people would have no choice but the incumbent.
That sound strategy, yes, sir.
Give us a little information about the incumbent.
The incumbent, okay. So there was a sheriff who stepped down midterm, and there was a process to replace him. At that time, I was a Republican, and I've been a Republican all my life until just recently. And so I was one of six names that were put before the Ada County Republican Central Committee to be considered to replace the sheriff who stepped down and finish his term. So there were six names, and then I was at the top of the list of the three finalists. Those three names, again with me at the top, went before the county commissioners, whose prerogative it was to vote out of order. And my book became a central piece of my public interview. Each of the three finalists were given public interviews, literally before the three commissioners, with the public sitting behind us in this big room. And there was out of my 60-minute public job interview, about 45 minutes was about my book. And so there's a lot of pressure on this one Republican, Rod Beck, and he ended up voting with the Democrat and put the number three, the last place candidate, in office. And then I ran against him in the following primary, because when you're appointed, you have to avail yourself to the next public election, because, as you know, the sheriff is an elected position, not an appointed position. So I challenged him, and I got 34.4% of the vote, which is actually pretty good considering all the negative press I got. And there were some shenanigans inside the Central Committee, and a lot of that's been resolved. We've had a changing of leadership there, and so I'm happy about that, and I have a lot of support still. So with all that said, you can better understand now why I'm running as a third-party candidate, because I want a guaranteed path to November, and I hope that people will vote principle over party as they understand more what I'm about.
Well, the way things could be in this country by that period of time, I hope enough people have had enough of the two ruling parties that I just, and on the county level, seems that's the only thing I would ever vote for again, was somebody running locally. That's kind of where I stand. And you said there were some shenanigans too about this. Casey has reported to us before about some things that are going on, what he called a Marxist network around that county. And a co-host of ours experienced a lot of similar things in North Carolina too. Would you want to address some of that? Maybe just the Marxist indoctrination is what you talked about, but you said there was infiltration too of local law enforcement as well, and that seems to be the case all over the country.
Well, there's certainly infiltration of the ideology, specifically implicit bias training, which is CRT for cops, critical race theory for cops. The premise of that is that white racism is the fundamental organizing principle of the United States society and even the West as a whole. And so the agencies, including the agency I'm running to be head of, the sheriff of, teaches this implicit bias training. With respect to the Ada County Sheriff's Office in particular, the implicit bias training stems from a relationship with the MacArthur Foundation, a tax-exempt left-wing organization. They received $1,450,000 in grant money since 2015. They just received, this finished their last pile of money that was dumped in their lap. But this implicit bias training, it doesn't reveal some deep-seated prejudice, subconscious prejudice in your mind. It insists that you have it. And so the effect of that on a patrol deputy is to be less proactive, because if you see suspicious behavior, and again, you're addressing behavior, right? But if the behavior happens to be, let's say, a black male, you might drive around the corner and come back and take the police report later instead of addressing the behavior, because that seed put in your mind from this Marxist construct, this implicit bias training, you worry more about surviving your administration than an enforcement contact or an investigative detention of a person based on behavior. So it's career suicide if you're too proactive, especially if your contacts happen to be in a demographic that the premise of the argument protects. They see certain demographics as the victim, and of course white society and law enforcement as agents of this oppressive white culture. This is their belief. So even if you're a minority officer, you go to this training too, and you as well would have a second thought about taking an enforcement action of what's called a suspect group that's suspect of being mistreated or oppressed. And so in terms of the cultural infiltration, that's what I'm referring to. I didn't see specifically any Marxist shenanigans in my my attempt to be appointed. There was different kinds of shenanigans. For example, I was denied a debate. I asked for the chairman, the then chairman of the Central Committee didn't give me one. Then he did a one-on-one interview with me, and it was filmed by a professional cameraman, and he had a backup audio. I could see the digital audio. He's professional, and I asked, when are you going to produce that? When are you going to put that online? He said, oh, there was a problem with the audio. Well, I see that very suspicious because I know there's a backup audio. And the fact of the matter was that I did a really good job on the interview, and he was trying to, get the third candidate in, the last place candidate in, who's now the incumbent. So he wasn't objective in the process. That's what I mean by shenanigans. And one last thing I'll say about the city of Boise in particular, you're talking about Marxist infiltration, at least ideologically. When the current mayor of Boise was about to take office, she came out with this transition report, and I have it in front of me. Under the section Transformative Leadership, it says, commit the city of Boise to an ongoing and robust efforts to interrupt white dominant, white supremacist culture with a multi-layered strategy. Yeah, and designate a full-time city of Boise staff person to serve as director of Equitable, Safer, and Thriving City. And it goes on to talk about white fragility and other things like that. So that kind of tells you the mayor of Boise, and of course I'm running for a county position, but the mayor of Boise, the largest city in the state and the capital city, that's some insight into her mindset. And so a sheriff, of course, doesn't work for the mayor. And so I've got
public records requests from the mayor's office. And actually, mm-hmm. they were working with an organization called the Western State Center that was run by Eric Ward out of Portland, Oregon. So they're working directly with these Marxist organizations to implement this social inclusion.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I'm glad you took that initiative to do that. But yeah, she's just really out there. And so I think as sheriff, I intend to push back on some of this nonsense, because I know that Boise City officers, they live here, they have their families here, and they want to protect the city, and I want to protect the county as a whole from sliding to Seattle. I mean, many of our officers moved here from hellholes like Portland and San Francisco. We have a lot of lateral transfers, and yet they find a very similar ideology in the management of at least Boise City. And so I'm sort of looking at myself as their voice, where I had to get in and push back on in this culture war.
Okay, just real quick, Stephen. Go ahead.
Go ahead, that's fine. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, all right, well, I just was in an inner break into his book here, maybe. Could you tell us about your book, Red Badge? It's a veteran peace officer's commentary on the Marxist subversion of American law enforcement and culture. And you've hit on that a little bit. Tell us a little bit how many years you've been in law enforcement, and tell us about your book and why is there controversy around it, surrounding it?
Yes, I served 32 years in law enforcement. I did the first, from 84 to 94, I served in San Diego County, specifically the city of Chula Vista, which is located 7 miles from the Mexican border. And frustrated with the same sort of politics we're talking about now, I moved to Idaho, and I decided I was going to be a deputy sheriff instead of a police officer. And then I worked for the Ada County Sheriff's Office for 9 years, and then I transferred to the Ada County Prosecutor's Office and finished my career there, doing about 14 years with them. And over the course of my career, certain things that happened to me caused me to wonder what this influence is on law enforcement that is steering away from a meritocracy and doing sort of social promotion and making us less proactive because we were forced to go to these cultural sensitivity trainings and things like that. And so I started digging, and I discovered the roots of Marxism, and then I started connecting the dots on what it is and what its strategies are and what its end game is. They want to create a cultural vacuum, which, of course, is only temporary, right? And they also want to make police ineffective so that things get so bad, with an open border and ineffective, reactive police work that the people will trade their liberty for safety, And so that's sort of the genesis of it, is just what I saw, in my career, and then just questioning what is this illogical sort of suicidal mindset in administration? Where's this coming from? And so, you know, of course, the Marxist strategy, the classic strategy, is to create division and conflict. You know, originally it was between the proletariat and the bourgeoisie, and today it's still, you know, class, but it's beyond that. It's division with race and religion and sex and sexual orientation, and all these classes are deemed downtrodden or disenfranchised. They love that word. And they're pinned against the common villain culture, you know, the West, and the common oppressor, the white, but in particular, the white male Christian. Now, the one thing they hate more than that, of course, is a non-white, patriotic, successful minority. That drives them nuts. but it does affect law enforcement. And as I say, their end game is a total transformation to an authoritarian state. And they're using the Marxist strategy of division and envy to do that. And they have to create a boogeyman. You know, in fact, minorities are so successful in the United States that's why they have to use this nebulous philosophy, you know, CRT, and prop it up with hoaxes and selective outrage. I'll give you one example real quick of some selective outrage. It's unlikely you heard of this, but there was an armed 20-year-old white male named Darren Taylor, who was shot and killed by a black Salt Lake police officer just 2 days after Michael Brown died. And most people haven't heard of it. Now, if the KKK, as opposed to the Black Lives Matter, if the KKK was organizing demonstrations and riots in Utah over the shooting of an unarmed black young man, I mean, white man by a black police officer, martial law would have been declared without hesitation, right? So I'm just pointing out the contrast and the hypocrisy and the selective outrage. That this story hardly even made it in the media, you know. So the media are you know, they choose which stories to inflate and how long it's going to live, and it's with an end game in mind, so that people believe that the police are the Klan in blue, out killing blacks indiscriminately. Well, far more whites are killed than blacks a year by police, number one, and the demographics and the victim offender demographics of crime paint an entirely different picture than what the talking heads on the mainstream media will have you believe. Heather McDonald does a lot of research on this topic.
Okay, and can you tell us a little bit about your book? And people can get that actually on Amazon. It's called Red Badge.
Yeah, and so I talk about how social justice is undermining criminal justice, and there's a big contrast between the two. Most of people don't really understand what it is. You know, social justice is a way of regulating, controlling human behavior. In primitive societies, it can work. Like, let's just say, closed, small tribal societies, or even religious societies. The standard of evidence, if a member of the society breaks a rule, can be hearsay, rumor, that's accepted as evidence, right? And that's kind of where we are now. It's like the Me Too movement. You know, believing a woman over a man is no better than believing a white person over a black person or a rich person over a poor person. The standard of evidence needs to matter. And in our criminal justice system, which is now infected by social justice, this is one of the influences of this Marxism, which I talk about in my book.
We're coming up on the first break, Doug. We'll be right back after the break, folks. Yeah, we'll be right back.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Charles de Gaulle once said, actually, it's difficult to envision in this regard any other criterion, any other standard than gold. Yes, gold, which does not change in nature, which can be made into either bars, ingots, or coins, which has no nationality, and which is considered in all places and all times the immutable and fiduciary value par excellence. So when the question is, why gold? It's simple, my friends. The answer to that question is simply, why not? Like it or not, precious metals will always be the world's reserve currency. Even though nations do not define their currency by their worth in, say, gold, individuals still buy gold and silver to protect themselves from inflation. The more money a nation's central bank pours into the economy, the less valuable its currency, the dollar is, which means the price of everything else rises. $21 up for a bag of dog food. Seeing that the dollar is cheap, that's why the cost of everything goes up. It's because the buying power, the value of the dollar has tanked. It's worth nothing. And yet gold that your family would have owned in 1907 will buy at least the same amount of goods, if not far more. William McPhee once stated, it's extraordinary how many emotional storms one may weather in safety if one is ballasted with ever so little gold. The truth about money, gold versus cash in a crisis, gold, a valuable thing to store, the power of gold in times of crisis. Historical sketch of paper currency. Oh, and beware the ides of rare coin dealers. And Alan Greenspan's speech on gold and economic freedom. How interesting. I'm going to give you gold and silver in 5 easy lessons. Seeking out the most efficient and most secure route to owning gold and converting it into widely accepted currency is the next best thing to enjoying gold-backed currency, my friends. In a world of central bankers hell-bent on devaluing our savings, you need to own private gold standard. Contact me, Jeffrey Bennett at Kettle Moraine Limited, by calling our phone number at 602-799-8214. That's 602-799-8214.
And we're back, folks. Sorry, Doug, that break cut you off. You were going over the difference between social justice and regular justice and where the facts don't matter anymore, kind of when you were interrupted, maybe a little after that. Let me toss it back to you, sir.
These Soros-type prosecutors, they're decriminalizing things because the social justice warriors have made an argument that America was never great. Right, and so they're trying to load the criminal justice system with emotion, and bending, having the system bend to their victim status. We're oppressed, and so we need a lot of grace. Well, you see what happens in these cities where, you know, the most minor crimes are not being prosecuted anymore. You know, the decriminalizing, and so that is one of the big influences. And beyond that, even inside of larger agencies, you have these different police associations. My book talks about that. Like, you might have the Black Police Officers Association, the LGBTQ Association. They're like little mafia groups. It's almost impossible to fire one of them because they have the protection of their group and they have lawyers. And so, in some cases, the tail's wagging the dog, you know, in some of these agencies. And so the influence of this Marxism on law enforcement is, it is inside the agency, politically, with these different groups. If outside the agency, how we, you know, interact with citizens, particularly if there's, like I said earlier, suspicious circumstances and you're reluctant to engage the behavior because you're afraid that your motives will be seen as less than pure if the optics of the contact go south. In other words, it becomes a confrontation of some sort, use of force, and everyone's phones are out. So you're better off being an armed report taker and not being proactive because of this influence of Marxist ideology that the United States has always been, you know, is a racist, oppressive place, and the police are the Klan in blue. And so it's becoming more and more difficult for police to do their job, and as a result, crime will keep going up. You could triple the number of officers in a particular area that's infected with this poison, and crime will still go up. because if they don't feel safe being proactive, if they're more afraid of their administration than they are an encounter with a violent criminal, then the taxpayers are paying for armed report takers.
You know, we saw that kind of thing take place in Portland a few years ago. And you mentioned how Seattle had gone, and I just, that horrifies me, what has taken place. It reminds me somewhat, the way you said that they have these little mafia groups, their association, or of the infiltration of teachers' unions in Mexico that just completely ruined any education that they wanted down there. I remember reading about that a few years ago. It reminds me very much of that, what you see is taking place with this DEI in police associations, and well, DIE, that we would call it diversity, is for die white man, but I heard DEI was you didn't earn it too, and that has a profound cumulative effect on any association, and you're seeing the end result of it, like I was saying there in Seattle, and you mentioned some other places. How is it in Idaho that you're trying to stop this corrosion, I guess you put it, maybe a good way to put it?
Well, I mean, I'll stop it in my agency by, of course, eliminating it and replacing implicit bias training with Matthew 7:12, the golden rule. I mean, apply God's principles over man's, and the outcome will be, you know, much better. Just teach the golden rule. I mean, I need to I'm hoping the voter will use their ballot as a scalpel, in other words, so that I can get in there and surgically remove this influence. It's been a cancer since 2015 in the agency. I want to eliminate it altogether. Just teach the golden rule. And I want my officers, my deputies, to be proactive, constitutional, and professional. And I'll say one thing, too. When I was a cop in San Diego, one of the best officers I ever worked with, his name was Mike Cuellar. The guy had an amazing investigative mind. And you talk about, like, you know, promotion, you know, just because of someone's color or race or orientation. Now, I believe in merit. Well, this guy was absolutely stellar. And if I was competing with him for promotion and he beat me, I'd salute him and say, good choice, Chief. You should have picked him. Well, sadly, though, as good as he is, let's say they promote someone else who's Hispanic and was an underperformer, but there's pressure to increase the numbers, right, because looking for parity, right, because if there's disparate outcomes, if we don't have the right, you know, percentages, that's evidence of some sort of, you know, institutionalized racism. And the unfortunate thing is you see a Mike Cuellar who deserves his stripes, and is an excellent cop, driving around with you can see his share bones on his sleeve as the public can see him as he drives by, and they interact with him, and they say, this guy is professional and squared away. And then they get the other guy who doesn't deserve it, and so maybe now when they see Mike driving by, they might assume he's no better than this slug that they just had interaction with. So it damages, you know, the people ostensibly they're even trying to help. I mean, the whole thing is just a nutty ideology, but we know what their end game is. You know, they're trying to, destroy proactive policing. They're trying to create strife inside the agencies. And ultimately, as I say,
and there's the break again, Doug. I'm sorry about that, yep. But we'll be back on the other side, folks, to continue this. There's the assassin's own group, 10 more lines dancing on the floor. Cold steel odor on their bodies made of wood to command.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news. Real talk. Real people. Because you can handle the truth.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few highlights. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I have been using Extendivite for many years. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
Welcome back, y'all. You listen to Beyond the Official Narrative on RBN. I have Doug Travel and Casey Whalen joined me. And Doug, I'm sorry the break keeps cutting you off, but this community policing policy with the critical theory and I'll make it, that just, you know, that's going to end badly. You talked about their end game. And it sounds, I want to ask you, how is this any different than the USSR? This is like the USSA we're living in now. I'm sure that they have a political solution. They could go federalize all the police eventually. That seems to me like the way they want, what they really want to do.
It is. They're going to have a hard time. That's why they're coming after the CSPOA so hard, because sheriffs, they're the only elected law enforcement officers in the country. And so you're right. And I think I think they're trying to make life so unlivable, as I said earlier, that people will readily surrender their safety for security. And one mechanism for making law enforcement less effective are these consent decrees. When I first wrote the book, and I've done a few updates to it, when I first wrote it in 2013, I think that back then there was about 30 agencies under DOJ consent decrees, which is kind of an odd name because there's really not much consent involved in the decree. In other words, the Department of Justice Civil Rights section comes into, let's say, Seattle PD. At the time, it was under a consent decree. I'm not sure if it still is or not, but they come in, they say, hey, look, we've done a study. You have a disparate outcome and use of force on minorities. You either allow us to consent for us to come in and, in essence, run your agency behind the curtain there, or we're going to sue you with our unlimited resources. And so, of course, you know, you're going to consent then for them to come in. Well, now you were worried about your chief before they came in, the Fed. Now the Feds are there looking at every report, looking at your policies, looking at your on-body videos. And so that really, causes officers to be, less proactive, if really at all. And I'll tell you, and also in vehicles, we have these mobile data terminals, and we can see in some agencies, you can see where the different patrol cars are, and you get a call for service. Let's say it's a disturbance involving a black male and a black female in front of a Walmart or something like that, or a bar or whatever. And you can actually see, as the call is coming out in the description, the patrol car is moving away from the area. They should be going to the call, like, oh, hell no, right? I mean, and so eventually dispatch, you know, will assign someone because they can see where the cars are too, but people are trying to move away because they know that the optics could be bad if an enforcement contact results in some sort of force. So it's like a real-time thing to watch. You can actually see the cars moving away when that kind of description comes out. Yeah.
That's very telling right there. You just painted quite a picture for me. I can imagine the mindset, too. I mean, if they are more afraid of their administration and that, or the, as you called them, these groups that you called little, I don't know, special interest mafias or whatever, they're afraid of them more than the criminal. Then they're, you know, and so they know they're not going to be able to do their job effectively. They're not going to be able to say stand up for themselves, like you said, an armed note taker, report taker, and that's it. Unless they are literally attacked, it's not a big jump from there to where a law enforcement would start to enforce thought crimes, arrest people for praying and things like they've done, or Twitter posts in other places. You know, I can see that is not as obvious here, except for I've saw some federal stuff about that, but you know, the local and the state, I haven't seen that as much, but it's not as big a jump as I would think to go from one to the other. You know, they're moving away already, trying to not do that job. Oh, if we got another one to keep us busy, that'd be even better. And you know, that's just insane. It strikes me as a ludicrous policy, sir. I'm glad somebody with some common sense is at least running against it. Hey, Casey, you have another question for Doug, and let me just turn it back over to both you guys. Let me say that to start with, but and then turn it over to you for another comment.
Yeah, I wanted to mention real quickly that I've been working with the CSPOA and Sam Bushman, the CEO, who has his own show, Liberty Roundtable, live every weekdays, and he's been getting attacked by this organization called the IREHR, which stands for the Institute for Research Education on Human Rights. It was created in 1983 by communist Leonard Susskind. Its current president is Devin Burkhardt. And so I have they wrote an article essentially because the CSPOA and Richard Mack came to Coeur d'Alene on April 13th, just literally a couple weeks ago. And so they sent emails throughout the state of Idaho to all the sheriffs, and I can give you a sample of one of the, because I did public records requests. I just got the public record request that the IREHR was requesting from sheriff's departments throughout the state of Idaho, asking for pertinent information about deputies within the sheriff's departments and their affiliations with the CSPOA. And they were requesting all communications from a date range of July 2023 to current. So I have some of these emails. And so this is a letter from Devin Burkhardt, who's the president of the IREHR. And this is to Sheriff Bart Heslington, and he's the president of the Idaho Sheriff's Association. He says, "It has come to our attention that a notorious group with ties to insurrectionists and white nationalists is attempting to recruit law enforcement in Idaho, potentially including you and your deputies. We are reaching out to you and your department with a sense of urgency and concern regarding the upcoming plans by the so-called Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, CSPOA, for an all-day event in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho on April 13th. And it just goes on, you get the idea, but it says that in addition to the concerns of our organization, it is important to note that both the Anti-Defamation League and Southern Poverty Law Center categorize the CSPOA as an anti-government extremist group. This classification should raise serious concerns and prompt a cautious approach towards any involvement with the CSPOA. So that's to give you just a little flavor. And they mentioned that the CSPOA is a far right pro paramilitary group. And it goes on. But they mentioned their violently racist, anti-Semitic, pomicomitatus sheriffs, which can usurp the judicial branch in the judicial branch's role in implementing or interpreting the Constitution. So anyways, they have a real problem with the sheriff being the law of the land, or, you know, having the final say in the county. Doug, you have a comment?
Yeah, you're absolutely right on. And I will say that, in my opinion, regarding the government, I'm saying the government instead of our government, because I do think that the government is at war with the ideological descendants of the founding fathers. And so if you have reverence for our founding ethos, I guess that makes you, some sort of a whack job, paramilitary, whatever, as they say. I support a constitutional government. I want a government that fits in the Constitution. You know, so what they do is, you know, they take people like me who are critical of the overreach of government, a federal government drunk on power it was never intended to consume, going beyond its 18 enumerated delegated duties. You know, and if you criticize the administrative state or the policy with open border, you're a racist. And so they just simply twist your words, and this is done because they realize that the sheriff is something to be very hard to remove. So they just try to discredit the organization, thereby trying to make it difficult for people like me to get in office. Instead, they might get some sort of an establishment sheriff candidate in there who's going to step on your rights if COVID 2.0 comes around, or some armed bureaucrat in a police costume comes on your land to give you a ticket for some regulatory violation, which is not law, right? So they don't want sheriffs to understand that their oath is to the Constitution, not the president or the governor or the mayor. And so that's why I think that's where this anti-government stuff comes from. It's not anti-government, it's pro-Constitution, which is the employee handbook of the federal government. And so I've been, attacked and, for things I've written and said. And but I'll tell you, the CSPOA is a fantastic organization with a great mission. And I salute Sheriff Richard Mack, and I'm going to stay right with him, and hopefully I get in November.
Well, I have to say you and I disagree at a certain point. I probably resemble their remarks more than you guys, because I stand up for the Declaration of Independence and considered the Constitution the counter-revolution against that. But that they have the necessary and proper clause, and they have the judiciary, so that the government can wield, the federal government, as you said, can wield power. And there's only, and we will have to stand up to it. And I salute anybody who's trying at all. I'll say that. I'll let it go at that for the moment, because, I've learned things that about history that I didn't know the last few years that kind of very much altered my point of view. But I salute you for trying to serve the people of your county that seems to me that should be the most pertinent aspect for anyone who is actually elected to serve as a sheriff, whether they are serving the local population or not. These people clearly, let me turn it back over to you with that, Casey.
Oh, no, I was just going to say thank you for that comment, compliment.
Yes, sir, I appreciate that. I would, at the county level, if we don't stand up to this somehow, it's just going to be worse and worse and worse, and it'll be, I just can't imagine what they want this country to look like, and we're headed in that direction rapidly. I haven't traveled around as much as some people, but go ahead, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, sorry to interrupt you. The best way to avoid the evolution of a police state, in my opinion, is to incorporate the citizens into the daily operation of the sheriff's office in the form of a posse and reserve deputies. And this is tied to, goes back in history, to Robert Peel, who is credited with the first full-time professional Metropolitan Police Department in London. The Brits were suspicious of this proposition because they know history, and they were concerned that it might turn into an internal security force like in Rome, the Praetorian Guard. And so to put the public at ease, Robert Peel, and that's why we call them Bobbies, his first name is Robert, Robert Peel came up with these principles, and principle number 7, Peelian principle number 7, I'm paraphrasing, I can't quote it, but something like, basically it says that the police are to supplement the public and not replace them, that the public still has a duty in law and order. And so that the whole posse notion that I'm big on, I think is a really a healthy way to bridge the gap between citizen and servant, and to remind both sides that it's we the people, and it's a way to educate the citizen too, and stand up to overreach like these regulatory agencies, as I said earlier, armed bureaucrats in police costumes, so that if the sheriff interposes, physically stands between the citizen and the bureaucrat with his overreach of some kind or tyranny or abuse, he can call upon the citizens of the county to back him up.
Yeah, and Doug, if I may, can you just you interviewed Sheriff Bob Songer, Clickitat County, and he discussed how he's has run a posse there. What was your takeaway from that interview, and how could people incorporate that into their county? Obviously through the sheriff, but that's just generally my question.
Yeah, he sees it and is implementing it pretty much the way I would as well. These are force multipliers. They're not, quote, law enforcement. They're not sworn, but they're called into action when a particular need arises. It could be as simple as extra eyeballs on the street. Like in his county, he has them driving cars, their own vehicles, with their own gas, and has a magnet on the side that says posse. And they basically observe and report. They're not supposed to engage because they're not deputy sheriffs, but they're extra eyes and ears. That's very effective and cost effective for the taxpayer. In my county, I would like to have a certain number trained up in riot control because, I mean, let's just say we did have some situation down here where, you know, people from Spokane or whatever came down here to riot over some controversial shooting or what have you. I only have so many deputies, and so we need to be able to tap into a vetted, carefully vetted and trained citizen force that arrives to a muster location and then is given their responsibilities, and they've already been trained in formation and riot control. And then we get on the prisoner transport buses and we go down there and we go to work on whatever the sheriff's mission is. And so there's a number. You could use them for surveillance. If you have someone who's wanted and you want to take them into custody, but you don't want to pay overtime to have a deputy sit on the house, you put a posse member there to safe distance away with a radio. Again, he's not to arrest. Once he sees the suspect go mobile, he gets on the radio, and then a regular deputy comes in the area and stops him and makes the arrest. So there's a number of things you could do with the posse. And then reserves, that's different. Reserves are actual deputy sheriffs, and typically they have to ride with a full-time deputy. And there's different levels, but typically that's what happens. And that's a smart way to go, too, because now you've increased the capacity of one patrol car by adding another deputy, and you made it safer for both deputies. And again, it doesn't cost the taxpayer anything. And finally, it's another one of those ways to bridge the gap between the sheriff's office and the public with the posse members. It can be used in support roles, in clerical roles inside the agency, and in the field, and same with reserves. So I think it's a very healthy way to go. And it just with respect to the evolution into some authoritarian state, as I predict, I think it's a healthy way to keep that bond between the sheriff and the citizen, and understanding what the purpose of government is. You mentioned the Declaration of Independence, and it tells us what the purpose of government is: to secure God-given rights. And so when you're training the citizens up, you mention the Declaration of Independence, you mention the organic law of the United States, the founding ethos, and so that they're fueled by our founding ethos, not the administrative state. You know, their oath of office is not to the administrative state. It's the state constitution and the U.S. Constitution.
And what they're trying to get their allegiance to is this social justice and the diversity and some political ideal. It's very much, it looks so much to me like we are living in the midst. This is the USSA now, is the way it looks to me. And there's so much more federal money they could bring in to go against all these common sense things that you're talking about. That's what we're up against, I think, partly, is all of this federal money, but the like you mentioned, Soros and all of these weaponized piles of money that they're throwing at us for the various ends, I guess. But that's what the local police are up against, and I can understand how it turned out the way it did in Seattle when they started letting little things go and made the people afraid of that, of their administration, or of looking. I can't go out and look like I'm at all making any racial distinction here, you know, just because there's a gang here it's just me. That's deadly. That's going to get some. Well, it ends up like you described, with the officers trying to run away from their job. That's got to stop. I mean, at some point, the communities will either turn around or everybody will leave. Like you said, a lot of refugees, so to speak, law enforcement refugees ended up there with y'all from the liberal Northwest. And there's the final break of the hour, folks. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Debo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Easeoff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Welcome back, y'all. This is Beyond the Official Narrative on Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org. I'm Stephen Whitener, filling in for Richard Carey. And Doug, you okay with taking some callers next hour? Would that be okay?
Sure.
All right. RBN, if you have a specific question or a comment for Doug or Casey or myself, 512-248-8252. And let me ask you to mention some websites that you have, sir.
DougForSheriff.com is my website, DougForSheriff.com. That's for my campaign website. And if you're interested in my book, Red Badge, Veteran Peace Officer, a commentary on the Marxist subversion of American law enforcement and culture, that's on Amazon.com. Just put in Red Badge, a Veteran Peace Officer. That's enough. Title, it'll come up. Red Badge, a Veteran Peace Officer. That's enough to remember. And it'll come up. And I have another book called Can They Do That? How Police Get Around the Fourth Amendment, because I think it's important that the citizen know their rights. You know, I mean, it's as much a book for the officer as it is the citizen, and that's also on Amazon.com.
Thank you. And you will be on the ballot in November as the Constitution Party candidate for sheriff. That's correct, right, sir? It's like you mentioned that you went that route to kind of ensure that you'd have a place there. And one other question, will they allow you to debate the other candidates before then?
I've already asked through a third party, and the incumbent has turned it down. the Democrat. I don't know if he's been asked or not. The Democrat's not really relevant in this, except for maybe, you know, the vote being split. I've been asked that. Doug, are you worried about splitting the vote and maybe the Democrat getting in? Which is a fair question. And my answer is no, I'm not, because I see no substantive difference between both of them. The Democrat is more radical as far as the DEI stuff, the incumbent, because he still has that. He inherited this implicit bias training and has kept it. So I would already argue that the Republican, the incumbent, is walking the agency to the left. The Democrat will run the agency to the left. So there's no difference. I'm the difference. I'm the wall and the pushback. I'm the guy with the scalp who's going to cut that cancer out and deliver a proactive, constitutional, more professional agency.
And hey, Doug, can you maybe talk real quickly before the... Go ahead, Stephen.
No, go ahead. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah,
right. I was going to ask, I mean, not to introduce another topic, but to me, it's very interesting that, you know, we have fusion centers in Idaho. There's generally one in each state. And in Idaho, it's called the ICIC or the IC2, and that stands for the Idaho Criminal Intelligence Center. So what are your thoughts on these fusion centers and what danger do they pose to liberty?
Well, I've never been in one. I've heard about them. I've never been, you know, in them or not. But I think anything like that, same thing with the JTTF, the Joint Terrorism Task Force, anything like that, as long as the sheriff, his designee, is in charge of it, I feel a little more comfortable. If he's not involved at all, or if he's involved and he's not, you know, the sergeant in charge of the unit or the lieutenant in charge of the unit, then I would worry a bit. I mean, if you have a constitutional sheriff oriented like me and he handpicks the person in charge of that unit, then I'm less worried. I would be worried if that wasn't the case because, you know, I think, you know, if you own a Bible and a gun these days, you know, you're suspect. If you have reverence for our founding fathers, you're suspect. You look at the January 6th, you look at the contrast between January 6th and how the BLM, ATF, you know, rioters are treated. And so my concerns are, you know, where are the crosshairs of these kinds of organizations?
That's the end of the first hour, Doug. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but we'll be right back after the break, folks. Sorry, top of the hour there. The music's coming up.
7:10 with John Moore from 7:10 with coffee cup in hand. Wake up with the Liberty Man. Highly qualified guests share their knowledge with the callers Monday through Friday. His website is second to none. It's thelibertyman.com. You'll find everything right there. Start your day and be prepared. So give a listen or a call. Tune in weekdays on RBN. Start your day and be prepared, so give a listen or a call. Tune in midweekdays on RBN. Start your day on RBN with John Moore from 7 to 10 with coffee cup in hand. Wake up with the Liberty Man.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.